Whether you drive a car, need a car, or just occasionally bum a ride with friends, you've come to the right place.
Join the editors of Consumer Guide Automotive as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
Here's your host, Tom Appel.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Hey, thanks for joining us today. When you get a chance, please visit us at consumerguide.com. Be sure to check out our 2021 Best Buy picks. This list is an excellent starting place if you are looking for a new car or crossover. You will also want to check out our blog for complete reviews of all the vehicles we're driving here at Consumer Guide, plus all sorts of other fun car-related stuff. And if you have missed an episode or two of the podcast, you can stream back episodes of the show right there on our homepage. Hey, if you have a question or comment, drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com. That is carstuff@consumerguide.com. All right, let's see who is online with us today. She is the managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. She is the driving force behind the Drive She Said blog. She is Jill Simonillo.
Hello.
How you doing?
Good. It's, you know, a day.
Yeah. It is. And specifically, it's Thursday, which is the day that we record the podcast. So if we miss any news Friday or Saturday, our apologies. We'll get to it next week.
We will. I know. I was like, I don't know if I say good morning, good afternoon. I mean, I guess it just really depends on when you're hearing this. So hi.
You know, I do pre-recorded shows where they worry about that, but we're just not that sophisticated.
we really aren't. At all.
All right. He is the senior editor here at Consumer Guide. He is president of the Midwest Automotive Media Association, and he prefers yams to sweet potatoes. Welcome, Damon Bell.
Is there a difference between the two? I thought they were same.
There is a difference.
Oh, there is? What is
it? Yes. I don't know, but it's there.
Damon, I'm glad you asked. According to ncsweetpotato.com, the yam is drier, thicker, and barkier, and typically from West Africa, than the sweet potato, which is generally sourced from North Carolina.
Are you serious?
Yes.
Wow. Is it? Would you kind of liken it to the relationship between a plantain and a banana?
Whoa. Ooh. That feels very apt. Yes.
Well done.
I had no idea.
Comparison.
I had no idea. We always get sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes are really good for you. They're like full of nutrients and stuff. And, but I didn't know that. I guess I've never looked in the grocery store to see that they have yams as well. But you can get yams in a can in sweet kind of syrup. I've done that before. It's a very odd brand named Bruce's or something like that.
I don't know that I've ever had yams unless there is a Nigerian restaurant near my house. I bet I've had yams there for sure. I'm guessing.
I always thought that the terms were almost interchangeable, but.
Right. So did I.
Interesting.
So you would, just to confirm, you don't prefer yams to sweet potatoes?
Well, I don't know that I guess I haven't had them back to back. I love sweet potatoes, but I don't, and I've never had like a raw, fresh, you know, produce bought yam. So I guess I couldn't say. If I've had yams, it's been the kind that comes in a can and it's in syrup.
Yeah.
And I enjoy those, but that's a different thing than a fresh sweet potato.
Yeah. All right.
I got to say something super quick. I know there's been a lot going on in America and the world today, but I had my own little bit of drama this morning because I came upstairs after working in the basement for a while and my kid's hamster had gotten out of its ball. So.
Oh.
I thought it was going to be much grimmer news than that, so I'm glad.
How is that not the most dramatic thing that's happened in the past couple of days?
I'm glad it only got out of the ball. Oh.
But Sandy's fine now?
Yes, I came upstairs and she was nibbling on something. She was nibbling on a bit of food on our kitchen floor in front of our dishwasher. So thankfully she didn't crawl behind the fridge or anything like that. I was able to scoop her up and put her back in her cage, but I have no idea how long she was out of the ball. But it appears as though our hamster ball has a faulty lid latch. So, or maybe my kids just didn't click it on all the way.
We should probably do an episode on hamster ball safety at some point.
It's an important issue.
Yeah. All right. Hey, guys, after the first break, we chat with Jake Fisher. He's the director of auto testing at Consumer Reports. We'll be talking about Consumer Reports' latest reliability findings and whatever else is on Jake's mind. You don't want to miss this conversation. But first, Damon, interesting news. It feels like a bit of rumor, but it feels 100% probable. What's going on?
Yeah, I think there are more details came out this week in an automotive news article about the partnership between General Motors and Honda. In those two companies have previously announced an agreement to team up and collaborate on both electric vehicles and internal combustion engine vehicles too in the immediate future. But there has been an automotive news article that is revealing a little bit more detail about that arrangement. And at the time, this is not specific info, but we're seeing more, the automotive news article is talking about specific vehicles that General Motors will build for Honda, specific EVs. And also, I don't think it was previously announced, but this automotive news article says that Acura will be included in that product partnership as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess it's not entirely surprising. Acura, of course, the luxury arm of Honda, and the Honda Pilot, very popular, is mechanically related to the Acura MDX. So the fact that they would have electric vehicles of similar size that are also related, that's not stunning.
Right.
Yeah. And I mean, so this partnership was first announced back in April, and I have a feeling we've discussed this on the show.
We did.
Previously, but yeah, as you said, like more details are starting to come out, and it looks like they're going to be doing a lot of the building in the Ramos, and I'm totally going to butcher this. I apologize for the Spanish speakers who are listening right now, but the Ramos Arizpe.
I think that's basically it. Ramos Arizpe. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We should talk about that factory more because I just like saying the name.
Okay. Well, it looks like they're going to start with the, again, according to the Automotive News article, they're going to start with the Honda crossover in 2023. So we're still a couple of years out. And then they're going to follow it up with the Acura EV.
Yeah, and that's going to be at a different plant,
At
former Saturn plant in Spring. So it's interesting that, we are seeing this product is going to be built at two different plants, sort of signaling this is not a small commitment. This is a pretty substantial partnership.
We should talk about that a little bit, because what we've seen are these huge announcements of capital spending on the development of electric vehicles. And there's an awful lot of concern that consumer demand won't be there right away, even though manufacturers are really kicking in huge money. But we hear about the massive numbers that Volkswagen is spending to develop its electric architecture, and General Motors too. And General Motors keeps making more news because it's pulling ahead these projects. But here's an interesting fact. And General Motors, very large corporation. I think it's currently the fourth or fifth largest car builder on the planet. Honda is like the seventh largest car builder on the planet. These two companies feel it necessary to share costs on the development of EVs, just sort of giving you an idea what kind of commitment is involved here. And it's not just that EVs cost a lot to develop, which may or may not be the case. It's the fact that this is in addition to maintaining a lineup of gas vehicles until this happens. So manufacturers are in a really weird position where they have to be doing two things at once, and it's really expensive.
Right. And it's basically this is a form of bet hedging, and as kind of taken aback. It's sort of a surprising thing, I think, for most people to think that, wait, General Motors and Honda, like all automakers, you'd think they're fierce rivals.
Sure.
But this is not an unprecedented thing. Mm-hmm. We've seen it kind of ramp up quite a bit, even taking EVs out of the equation. Let's talk about the Mazda Miata and the Fiat 124 Spider, the Mazda 2, which isn't sold in America anymore, and now the Yaris sedan and hatchback aren't either, but those were the Toyota Yaris sedan and hatchback. The most recent ones were restyled Mazda 2s. So these manufacturer partnerships are not unheard of and actually becoming more frequent than they used to be. The Subaru BRZ and Toyota 86, right, which we talked about recently. And in the case of those, the Miata 124 Spyder, the BRZ and 86, vehicles that, let's face it, sports cars are not particularly profitable or huge sellers. So that's manufacturers spreading the R&D financial burden of those, and each getting something out of the deal. And that's exactly what's happening here with the EVs.
Yeah, and I mean, I think it's also worth at least noting that this is not the same thing as badge engineering. So, you know, once upon a time, you know, Ford used to own Volvo, Mazda, Land Rover, Jaguar. And so you would see a lot of similarities between vehicles in the various lineups under that umbrella. And I mean, these are two completely different automakers. So like Honda and Acura, they're owned by the same company, but you have Honda and then you have General Motors, which are two completely different companies that have like completely different platforms and badges and everything that are coming together in a partnership. So, you know, it's very different than what you might see when you get like a GMC Yukon and a Chevrolet Suburban, which are basically the same vehicle under one brand and one umbrella.
Yeah, and that's going to be the real challenge here, because I think even casual consumers are not going to, we'll see what they want their Honda to be a Honda and it not be, and that brand identity is something that needs to be maintained. So that will be a challenge. And one of the things that stuck out to me in one of the articles I read is that these Honda and Acura EVs, they're going to be built by General Motors. And it said that some of them will even receive GM's OnStar system and the hands-free Super Cruise driver assistance system, which those two things, OnStar and Super Cruise, those are sort of signature technology that General Motors has. So that's surprising to me that those will be available in a Honda and an Acura.
I'm wondering about Super Cruise, if that's a brand that can transcend the General Motors or will and be licensed to other manufacturers as Super Cruise. It's also possible that Honda and Acura use Super Cruise and brand it differently.
Right. Call it something else.
Also important to note here is that Honda and GM have other projects going as well. Honda is a stakeholder in Cruise Automation, GM's largely owned by GM, the autonomous vehicle technology firm, and they're working together on fuel cells as well. So this tie-up is just part of a larger arrangement between these two companies. Very interesting to see where it goes. I don't think it's as big a deal or it will be as big a tie-up as this merger that's coming between Fiat Chrysler and Peugeot parent company PSA, but that tie-up too is linked in part to the fact that Peugeot has electric vehicle technology that FCA has really been dragging its feet on.
Do you guys think that the end game for Honda, because at face value here it seems that General Motors is more fully committed to this EV future than Honda is, do you think eventually that this is just a stepping stone for Honda and that they will eventually develop their own proprietary EV technology, or do you think they foresee this partnership continuing for a long time? Because as we've noted before, as tech forward as both Toyota and Honda are, and I guess for that matter Mazda, we haven't seen the Japanese automakers commit to pure electric vehicles as fully as the rest of the industry has.
No, Honda does have electric vehicles going in Japan, and they have shown electric concepts that are adorable.
Yes.
I think this may be a stepping stone. I'm not sure. I don't know where this goes, but I think it may be a stepping stone. And this is just how they can get something out there about the time that this is all going to start to, as interest in EVs crests. And after that, they may back off and try to be autonomous in terms of manufacturing EVs. But we'll see. Mm-hmm. Who knows? And anyway, GM's happy to have someone to cost share with.
Exactly. Mm.
All right, guys, we should take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Jake Fisher of Consumer Reports. You don't want to miss this conversation. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thanks for sticking around. Hey, this is the part of the show when I strongly recommend that you follow me on Twitter. I am Car Guy Tom. That is car underscore guy underscore Tom on Twitter. I promise to entertain you. All right, a senior director of auto testing, he oversees the automotive testing program at Consumer Reports, managing a team of dedicated automotive engineers, statisticians, and support staff. He has a bachelor's degree in engineering and an MBA, and he's a legit car guy. We are delighted to have him with us today. Welcome to the Car Stuff Podcast, Jake Fisher.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me on.
Jake, thanks for joining us. Good to have you here. You're probably busy with the new year starting. But it's just good to have someone from another review site on so that we can kind of compare notes.
Sure, happy to do that.
Jake, you are with Consumer Reports, and I think that that might be one of the more less well-understood review sites for a lot of reasons. I think a lot of people think automotive review sites, and they think that we all kind of do things the same way, but you guys are very different. There's a delightful altruism to the way you guys work. Not only do you review cars, you review all sorts of things, but you guys buy the stuff you review, which is mind-blowing to me. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure, absolutely. So yeah, Consumer Reports is probably pretty. We've been around for a long time. We've been around since 1936, but we're still not very well understood. And first of all, Consumer Reports, obviously they test other products besides cars. You know, I like to think of us as a car review site, but honestly, it's much more than that. Now, sure. I actually work in Connecticut, and that's where our test track is. So we have a 327-acre facility in central Connecticut. We've got a group of 30, and I will tell you the truth about what I don't know is I don't know anything about appliances. So we're dedicated to cars, and we're a bunch of gearheads. So don't ask me about which dishwasher to get. I could probably connect you to some good people. But we're kind of different. I mean, one of the strange things is, I mean, I've been a kind of a gearhead all my life. I mean, everything from rebuilding cars to racing cars and whatnot. Tell you the truth, I'm not telling you the best car for me. You know, I mean, I recognize that I'm a kind of a different animal. You know, we're trying to find the best cars for other people, normal people who actually need these cars. They want something safe. They want something reliable. They may not care how fast it goes around the Nürburgring or how good it is at drifting, which is things that are important to me, but not necessarily everybody else. But we do it by, we listen to a lot of people. We do a lot of surveys. We understand what normal people are looking for in their cars. We take the feedback from consumers. So, you know, the whole Consumer Reports thing kind of makes sense there. And, we purchase all the cars. So we purchase about 50 cars every year, put them through a whole bunch of tests over our test track, really put them through the paces. Everything's a long-term test because we own the vehicles. So they've passed hands. You know, we've done 2,000 miles before we're even doing any formal testing on our track. And you know, we find interesting things in that time. I'm sorry, I could fill all your time, but I mean, like when my kids were young. You know, my kids were young. I actually, they were trying to figure out. You know those things they have now in the trunks where they you could get out these emergency releases in the trunk.
Yeah, glow in the dark handles.
Yeah. Well, when they first started, my 4-year old was like, "What's that? Could I try that?" And he begged me to throw them in the trunk and close it. And I'm like, I can't do that. You know what people would say if you know? I mean, especially my position. Anyway, he explained to me that What if I needed to use it? I need to know how to do it. So anyway, I did that, and he didn't get out of the trunk.
Oh.
And he started banging on it, and I opened up the trunk, and he's holding it in his hand, and it broke off.
Oh
my gosh.
And you could Google it. You could look up my son. It was written about in the New York Times and elsewhere, but I mean, he found a flaw in this handle, and they wound up recalling about 700,000 Toyotas because of it.
Right.
So I mean, we're finding crazy things.
I have to give your son, how old was your son at the time?
It was 4.
I have to give your son props for using that kind of logic. Like, Dad, you need to put me in there so I can test it. Like, that's a
solid
argument.
Yeah.
I mean, that may have been the first time he outsmarted me. It wasn't the last.
So, Jake, if you can talk about the fact that you guys work with the owners of vehicles, they're basically members of Consumer Reports. Is that correct?
Right. That's exactly right. So we have millions of members of Consumer Reports. And it's right. It's not that there's a subscription and they read our magazine. They're part of it. So when we assess vehicles and we talk about, we have our top picks and we have our, you know, rolling ratings of all the cars, the way we determine that is one piece of that puzzle is what we determine on our track in our testing. That's one piece of the puzzle. A big piece of it is what we're hearing from actual consumers. So this is where we get into reliability, owner satisfaction. You know, we have hundreds of thousands of data on vehicles. About which cars are breaking down, what's going wrong with them, and we're able to project how these cars are going to hold up. And that's such an important part. You know, again, it's one thing to say, hey, this car really drives well, but if it's going to be in the shop or it's going to break down on you, that's a big deal. And we throw other things in too, in terms of standard safety features. We look at, you know, other aspects, and that's how we really rate those vehicles.
So, quick question for you, because I do have a subscription to Consumer Reports, and one of the things you guys do really well is you literally have every car in existence on there. You can search by year, you can search by model, and you break it down, but when you do your product reviews, you actually have a section on there on predictive reliability, and you mentioned that. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what that means and how you get that. Because some vehicles, and it's like a score of like out of five. And so some vehicles I've noticed get 1 out of 5. And then, you know, sometimes they get 5 out of 5. But like, how do you arrive at your predicted reliability? Because I think that there's some confusion, certainly for me, about how you get that number. So I have to imagine if I'm confused, maybe one other person is confused. So just... curious about
you're
that.
Not alone. You're not alone. Yes. Okay, sure. So we have data on both the whole world of cars, and we go back about 20 years. So we have data on vehicles going back 20 years. Now, the question is about predicted reliability, and this is very, a lot of people don't really understand the details of this. So really, when you're buying a new car, perhaps, you know, say you're going out and buying a new Honda Civic, right? Mm-hmm. The fact that the 2012 Honda Civic was reliable may not be that important to you. What you're interested in is, what about that car that is on the lot that I haven't driven yet, doesn't have any miles on it? So we don't have data on the car that you haven't bought yet. We don't have data on the cars that haven't been sold yet. So what we're doing is using what we know to predict the future. Right. And the way that we do that is, we'll look at each one of these makes and models. And if the vehicle is not changed generation, so say you're looking at the Honda Civic, and you know what, we've looked at the new 2021 Civic is really pretty much the same as the 20 and the 19. We'll look at that data of the same generation, see how each one of those vehicles do compared to other vehicles of the same year, and use that to predict how that vehicle is going to do. Now, if they change generation, then it doesn't make as much sense to look at that. Then we start looking at the manufacturer and how the manufacturer does in terms of the new launches. You know, and sometimes we'll look at, you know, shared componentry, for instance. Okay, maybe it's a brand new model from Hyundai, but you know what? It shares the powertrain with these three other vehicles that have been stellar. We'll use that, and then we'll predict. So that's where that 1 to 5 comes from. Basically, it's looking at the whole market. On average, it's going to be better than average or below average.
And so, do you always get that right?
No. you know, I mean, if I did, I would start playing the stock market. No, but
yeah, lottery tickets. You know, I mean,
right, exactly. I mean, look, it's think of it as a very educated estimate based on a huge amount of data and a huge amount of history. So, you know, for the most part, yeah. I mean, it is a very good prediction of what's going to happen. But things do change. So, for instance, you know, it's possible that Toyota will have a new model that won't be very reliable. It's possible that, you know, Jeep will come out and, you know, surprise everyone with a model that's very reliable. You know, we're looking at, you know, the trends, we're looking at the history, and, you know, not everything is 100%. I mean, there are Toyotas that have not been reliable, even though they have a great reputation. So it's not 100%. I mean, the best thing you could do if you're really looking for a reliable car is, one, you want to look for a car that has history. You don't want to get the new redesign in the first year or the new model in the first year. We see for years that this is the way it works. You launch the new model, there's growing pains. As that model goes on, they work out those bugs. And that outgoing model, you know, when it's like the new 2021 is out there and they're giving away the 2020s, the 2020 is the one you want.
Right.
Because they've worked out the bugs, they're discounting it. That's the safe bet right there.
Yeah, and that's really what became clear to me in reading your most recent reliability report is just from a manufacturer standpoint, it's this kind of diametrically opposed thing in that as an automaker, you have to keep innovating, coming out with new stuff, keeping up with the latest technology. But every time you do that, you're to a greater or lesser extent reinventing the wheel. And that's where unforeseen things. I think probably the most infamous example of that in automotive history was probably the Chevy Vega. Lots of innovative components of that vehicle, and most of them fell flat on their face. So
all of them.
Do you want to say all of them? Tom, you and I have talked about how gorgeous we think this. Maybe gorgeous is too strong a word, but we are real fans of the Vega styling. It's just that which makes it kind of sadder that it was such a failure in other respects. But yeah, that kind of the opposition between having to come out with new things, but then realizing that you're sticking your neck out there and creating new problems, reliability issues that are going to have to be ironed out in the future. But that, Jake, that's very interesting advice. That the last model year of an existing generation of a vehicle, even though it's not the latest and greatest thing anymore, probably the one that's a smart buy to get because the bugs will have been worked out.
Yeah, I mean, the way you describe it is exactly right. It's a balancing act that these manufacturers have to deal with, because you put in all those new technologies and the cars are more desirable. There's no question about it. But you keep things the way they are and you keep that proven technology continuing, and it's going to be reliable. And that's why we kind of put, you know, both those pieces in terms into our overall score. And you know, I like to think about what we're doing as information, right? If you want to go out and buy, you know, if you want to go buy a Tesla Model X or something, right? You know, I mean, and you, all that new technology is super important to you. We're going to go give it props for that. We're going to say, hey, this technology, it's really great technology. You know what? You may have more than your share of problems. If you go and decide that you want to do that and that's, you know, your decision, that's totally cool. You know, and it's, you know, and that's the thing. It's like, we just want to lay out all the facts. We're not going to say, you know, you're an idiot if you buy this car. You know, no. Mm-hmm. Everyone's got different priorities, and I think that's totally fair.
Jake, I wanted to talk to you about Tesla, so I'm glad you brought them up. It is understood generally that Tesla owners are very protective of the brand and reluctant to share problems that they have with the vehicle. Is this something that you guys have realized? Is it something that you deal with, or how do you deal with that?
So you know, it was I just a little aside. I mean, I've when we started testing Teslas, you know, obviously we said a lot of things about them, and I wound up having a lot of conversations actually with Elon Musk himself. And it was very interesting hearing from him. And you know, I think after the Tesla Model 3, I think we must have talked for about 45 minutes about it. And, you know, he himself was super happy to hear the information. You know, he's like, this is important because we want to improve this car. And it was very interesting. A lot of things that we found on the Tesla Model 3, they actually changed within about 6 months. I mean, we found an issue with the brakes and they were able to reprogram them. We said things about even comfort and they were able to change it. Ride and they were able to change it. So I mean, he's even tweeted like, hey, Onyx critics actually help us improve the car. the owners of the vehicles. Now, when we do surveys, we ask your satisfaction with the car. We ask, did you have any problems? And what we found is people are honest. So they will tell us, I love this car, but it did this and this and this wrong, and this broke. And this isn't something new, just the Tesla. Corvettes are notorious for this, right? I love my car. It's always in the shop, but I still love it and I would buy it again. And that's okay, because when you're buying, maybe when you're buying a Tesla, that's not the number one reason you're buying it, tried and true technology. You're buying it because it's really fun to drive. You're driving it because it's latest technology. It's not using gasoline, and that's fine. So, again, it's just laying it out. What's interesting about it is, you know, it's so funny how everything's always kind of black and white, you know. So what we say a lot of really positive things about Tesla vehicles in terms of our testing. And then, you know, people are like, oh, you're just trying to push the, you know, the electric car agenda. And then we go and we say negative things about the reliability. Like, oh, you guys are paid off by big oil. It's like, people don't get it. You know, and then they wind up cornering us. They're like, wait, are you for Tesla or against them? I'm like, no, you don't get it. There are good things about Tesla. There are bad things about Tesla. We're going to lay them all out, and you make your decision. But we're not going to go whitewash any of it.
Well, and you just said something. You kind of glossed over it a little bit. But I want to call attention to this. You said, you know, oh, yeah, they claim we're bought by big oil. But if memory serves, you guys don't have or accept any advertising. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, I mean, I shouldn't even be so split about some of these things here. I mean, Twitter person. But yeah, that's right.
Right.
So we
very important.
And I gotta say this because, like, you know, I mean, I do have you know, a lot of friends who, you know, work at, you know, different types of rating, and we have a freedom that I know not everyone has.
Yes.
You know, and if we say something bad about a certain automaker, we're not concerned that they're going to pull advertising or anything like that. So we do not accept any advertising. I mean, we have a, you know, if you pick up a Consumer Reports magazine, you're like, why is this so thin? You know, there's no ads in it. So it does make it easier for us to go and just kind of lay out all those facts. We get our money from the members, you know, and this is the reason why you go on our site and, you know, you're not getting hit with ads, but you're getting, you know, sometimes you're getting hit with, like, please pay us if you want to see our information.
Right.
You know, so it is a little bit of a different business model. You know, we also, you know, I will say that, you know, we do advocate, you know, for safer vehicles and other things. So there are donations to us, you know, a lot of people, people could donate to Consumer Reports. I mean, we're a nonprofit. You know, we're really here to try to improve the market. You know, telling people which car to buy is kind of almost secondary to kind of making better cars available
right.
to people is really what our true mission is.
I think we're kind of coming up on our time here, but I wanted to ask you again something about Tesla. And yes, I recall the testing you guys did on the Model 3 and that the over-the-air updates that Tesla made with the braking system after you guys found that the brakes were really subpar. Just looking ahead, and I'm, you know, with the 21 and 22 products that we're starting to see information on and as they're being released, the thing I'm seeing more and more is over-the-air updates. And it seems that your and our jobs will really be changing, but especially the way you guys test, in that things aren't going to be set in stone anymore. If a radio adjustment knob broke off in your hand, that was that. It was and that cars, once they were built, they were a set thing. But as Tesla is sort of leading the way on this over-the-air thing, there are substantial characteristics of the car that are not going to be set in stone as software takes more and more precedence. So how do you think, obviously you guys are going to be switching your testing processes to accommodate that, and how will that continue to change in the future?
Yeah, you're totally right. So, I mean, when it comes to Tesla, you know, we always have to have a Tesla, you know, since we bought one in 2012, you know, we have to have one because they keep on changing the vehicles. And we will update our information as they change the cars, and they're not going to be alone. Other vehicles will follow suit. So it's definitely a big shift for sure.
Well, Jake, we are completely out of time, which is a shame because I wanted to ask you questions about infotainment systems as well as juicers. I think you test juicers as well.
I might be able to help with the juicers, actually. I'm very much into smoothies and green smoothies. But, well, I mean, maybe we could do it again sometime. I mean, we also, so please, continue check out consumerreports.org. I mean, we have our own podcast too, Talking Cars. It's on like YouTube and stuff like that, but it's been really fun talking with you guys.
Yeah, I wanted to point out real quick that people looking for a car don't have to join for the year. You guys have a very convenient $10 monthly membership, which would cover the period of time while you're looking for a car. So that is a great way to confirm everything you need or want to know about cars. Jake, thank you for joining us today. And yeah, let's have you back on soon.
All right. That was a lot of fun. Take care.
Thanks. All right, that was Jake Fisher with Consumer Reports. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's quiz time. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thanks for sticking around. Hey, Jill.
Hey, yeah.
Jill, you're active on Screech. How can the kids follow you there?
Screech. That makes me think of, what was that show? Saved by the Bell.
Saved by the
Bell. There was a character. Yeah. Never liked him, by the way. So no, I'm not active on Screech. However, although I would say TikTok is kind of screechy sometimes. I am active in social media. You can find me at Jill Simonello, which is just my name, all one word, JillCiminillo. And I'm on pretty much every social media platform in that format, except for Screech. So TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, you can find me at Jill Simonello.
Damon, you're a Screecher.
No, I'm not.
Oh.
You can follow me on Twitter at Damon Bell Likes Cars, and I have a quiz question before the official quiz.
Oh.
Can either one of you tell me the name of the actor who played Screech?
No.
I'm embarrassed that this tidbit of information is in my head because I never watched that stupid show, but
Yeah. I actually just Googled that this week, weirdly, but what? I've already forgotten it. I know. Don't ask.
Well, how?
Come on, guys.
No, I have. Ah, see, Paul. Paul knows. I don't feel as weird now. Producer Paul knows.
To be fair,
yeah,
you,
I'm
Paul.
Like,
on that show.
I get that, but I already forgot it. What was the name again?
Dustin Diamond.
Dustin Diamond.
Oh, I did know that. Oh.
So, Jill, yeah. How, what, why did you, you can't put that out there and not elaborate.
So my husband and I were watching a show, and I can't even remember what show it was at this point, but I looked at the one of the characters, and I was like, that looks like Screech. And my husband's like, it is not Screech. And so then I had to Google it, and I was like, okay, you're right, it's not Screech. And that will probably be the only time in our marriage that I say, okay, you're right. But it was not, in fact, Screech.
My life would be better if I knew that Dustin Diamond was living alone in a trailer park, kind of not working. But, all right.
Yes.
On that sad note, it's quiz time. I hope you guys are ready.
Woohoo! It can only get better from here.
All right. The Car Stuff Power Quiz. Topic today is 2011. I hope you guys are prepared for this one. By the way, the Car Stuff Powercast, a podcast, is brought to you by Car Guy Tom. Follow Tom on Twitter, won't you? All right. Jill.
Yes.
First question goes to you. Jill, true or false, the Chevrolet Volt was introduced for the 2011 model year?
Ooh. First inclination is to say true, so I'm going to go with it.
All right. Damon, how about you?
Oh, man, that's a good question. I think I feel like that's right. Ooh. So I'm going to agree with Jill.
You both get a point.
All right.
I had a moment of rethinking, but glad I didn't. Okay, go.
I feel like it came out in 2010 as a 2011. Yeah.
You are correct, sir. All right. I'm keeping track, by the way. We're going to have an annual tally.
So. Oh, because this is the first quiz of the new year, right?
Yeah. So total points, total victories, and total bonus questions.
Spreadsheet.
All right. Question two. Score is 1-1. Damon, true or false, you could buy a compressed natural gas CNG-powered Honda Civic in 2011.
I will say yes. Like in California, I will say yes.
All right. Jill?
2011.
CNG.
I remember the natural gas version of the Civic. The question is 2011. I almost think that it might have been earlier than that.
Ooh.
I'm gonna say false.
Damon gets the point.
Okay.
Yes. It was but Jill, to your point, it was available between 2008 and 2011. To Damon's point, only in California, New York, and Utah.
Wait. Oh, but wow. The question was it available in 2011, not did it become available in 2011?
No, was it available?
Got it. Okay. So I was right but wrong.
Yes, which by the way translates to wrong, but yes.
Boo. Okay.
Jill, true or false, the Hyundai Veracruz, remember the Veracruz?
Oh, I do.
Started under $25,000 in 2011. True or false?
Oh, so Veracruz was the failed three-row SUV that, you know, they now have the Palisade. So this is 9 years ago, $25,000. Definitely started under 30.
Like in the logic.
I'm gonna say false. Because I think it was for a little bit more than 25,000.
Damon, same question to you.
Oh gosh. That is such a
esoteric?
I use this word way too much, but in regards to Tom's quizzes, but that's diabolical. Because it's just long enough ago. Things were cheaper back then, but that Veracruz was big enough. 25K. I think I'm going to agree with Jill. It's probably super close, but I don't think it was quite under 25.
The Veracruz, which was a midsize three-row crossover, as Jill noted, was available between 2007 and 2012 and started at $28,940. So you both get a point.
Wow. Yes.
Damon is 3-for-3. Jill, you're 2-for-3. Anyone can win this one. We go to question 4, which goes to Damon first. Damon, which of the following was not available as a 2011 model? The Acura ZDX, the Cadillac XLR, or the Dodge Nitro?
Oh, that's also mean.
ZDX, Cadillac.
And if people don't remember these cars, that's okay.
The XLR 2011. I'm going to say the ZDX.
All right. Jill, same question to you. Which of these was not available as a 2011 model? The bizarre Honda ZDX, which was a coupe, an early coupe crossover. Acura, thank you. The Cadillac XLR, which was based on the Corvette, or the Dodge Nitro, which was based on the Jeep, what was that called? Jeep Liberty.
Liberty.
So I feel like it was either the ZDX or the XLR, because the XLR was one of the first vehicles I drove when I first started writing about cars, and it's significantly before 2011. Good grief. But then the Nitro. God, when do they do away with the Liberty? That is a car that needs to be forgotten, which we have all clearly forgotten.
Okay, you're coming up on the buzzer, Jill.
I know. Okay. I'm going to be different. I'm going to go completely off the wall Nitro, not even on my first guest list.
Oh, you're both wrong.
It was the XLR.
Yeah, the Cadillac XLR was available between 2004 and 2009. Mm. And I suspect they're fairly collectible now.
Mm-hmm.
All right, one last question in the regular...
Sorry, Tom, what was the... Did you write down when the ZDX was available?
Yeah, 2010 through 2013.
But you said, you said 2011, right?
Yep. It was available in 2011.
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha. Okay. Yes.
Damon, you're winning 3-2. Jill, this question goes to you. You can tie it up if you get this right. Jill, true or false, the 2011 Nissan Versa 1.6 base came standard with air conditioning?
Ooh, base. I'm going to say false.
Damon, same question to you.
Did it, so false, the, so Jill, you're saying that it did not come standard with air.
Correct.
I'll agree with Jill.
You're both correct. No air. Yeah, this was this was the last sort of cheapest car you could buy. Base price was $9,990 plus destination, $760. The only option you can get on this version of the Versa was ABS for $250. Very cheap car. You both got the point, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
So it's 3-4. Damon has won the first quiz, but Jill, you can still earn a bonus point question, which doesn't count for much, but are you ready?
Yeah.
You kids ready? Actually, Damon goes first here. Damon, according to the label on the side of the bottle, which of the following is not an A1 steak sauce ingredient? Are you ready?
Sure.
Raisin paste, crushed orange puree, prune juice, celery seed.
Could you read through those again?
I can. Which of the following is not an A1 steak sauce ingredient? Raisin paste, crushed orange puree, prune juice, celery seed.
I'm going to say raisin paste.
All right. Jill, which is the fake ingredient?
Yeah, I'm thinking raisin paste as well, because, I mean, raisin paste and prune juice kind of, you know, same.
Redundant.
And I mean, celery seed makes sense. The crushed, I mean, there's got to be some kind of acid in there. So, I'll go with raisin paste.
I don't know how pasteable raisins are.
Oh.
Well, they're always, you can create paste out of raisins.
Hmm. Well, kids, have you surprised to know that the fake ingredient is prune juice?
Oh.
Wow. So raisins are pasteable. All right.
Yeah. Everything's pasteable. All right.
Damon, you win the first quiz of the year. An autographed copy of the quiz will be waiting for you on your desk when you arrive here at the office.
Excellent. I'll add it to my collection.
Yes. Hey, Damon.
Mm-hmm.
Damon, what's going on at the CG Daily Drive blog these days?
We got a bunch of good stuff to kick off the new year. And I just made a pun there and I didn't realize it. One of our newest articles is a first spin on the slightly refreshed for 2021 Nissan Kicks.
Kicks.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
Kicking it.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
The kicks of no, it's not. It's actually really bad. the Kicks, of course, is Nissan's entry-level subcompact SUV. It slots below the Rogue Sport. It is not available with all-wheel drive, but other than that, it's a pretty likable, cheap vehicle that doesn't feel cheap. And I actually wrote this for a spin, and I talk about in the article that these entry-level subcompact SUVs, the Kicks, the new for 2020 Hyundai Venue, and the Toyota CHR, and the Kia Soul, which has been around for a little bit longer. None of those vehicles have available all-wheel drive at the moment, at least, but they really are sort of taking the place of traditional subcompact sedans and hatchbacks. Mm-hmm. We're seeing that category sort of wither on the vine in these new, slightly elevated subcompact vehicles take over for them.
Yeah, I'm sort of convinced that Hyundai is going to have a very, very hard time selling the Accent subcompact sedan now that the Hyundai Venue is out there.
Mm-hmm. Isn't, you know.
Yeah, because the Venue is awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of charming. It's kind of fun. Really good use of space. So what else is new, Damon?
Real quick. So the Kicks gets a slight freshening that includes a different bolder front end styling, and it has an electronic parking brake with an auto hold feature. Just a few nips and tucks, a new larger infotainment screen. So a mild refresh, but just nip and tuck updates that really keep it fresh. And I would imagine help it compete against that venue in that market space as well. So yeah, there's a full first spin report of the kicks. We've got a quick spin report of a 2020 Jeep Gladiator Sport. That Sport is the entry level trim of the Gladiator, and it starts at $33,545, not including the $1,495 destination fee. $1,495 destination fee sounds semi-affordable, but any guesses as to what our base level Gladiator Sport test vehicle was optioned up to?
Jill?
I'd guess 50.
$50,540.
Good guess.
And yes. I haven't driven this one yet, or this specific vehicle, so that was totally a good guess.
Yeah, so over $15,000 worth of options on that vehicle. So again, that Jeep Mystique attracts a lot, is sort of unmistakable, but man, you really pay a lot for it. And if you're looking for a compact pickup solely for the utility, there are a lot better dollar values out there. But if you want that Wrangler look, the Gladiator is kind of the only game in town. And if you want a four-door pickup that you can turn into a convertible, which is a one-of-a-kind feature, the
Gladiator. Which I think is one of its primary appeals.
You think so? Yeah, that open-air feel. Yeah.
Wonderful recreational vehicle.
Indeed. It just, yeah, bottom line of this report is that you will definitely have to pay for it.
All right. We're running out of time here, Damon. You want to give us one more thing that's going on?
Yes. You went back a little bit further than 2011. We've got an ad gallery of car ads from 2002. Yeah. Doesn't feel like it's that long ago in many ways, but wow, 2002 was actually a long time ago, and it's remarkable how much things have changed since that moment in time.
Yeah, 2002 was when I joined Consumer Guide, and I was just thinking, we've got a new model year here. We're into 2021. At the end of this year, I will have been here 20 years, which is crazy talk. First of all, I don't know why I would hold a job for 20 years. That's nutty. Or that I would get away with just talking about cars for 20 years and getting paid for it, which is additionally nutty. But looking back, yeah, things have changed so much in 20 years, and you wouldn't think so. But yeah, almost none of the cars shown there, the ads for those still exist. It's a great looking gallery to check out. All right, kids. Well, we have run out of time, but Jake Fisher was a great guest. I'm glad we got him. But let's thank some people here. Thank you, Jill Simonillo. Happy New Year. Thank you, Damon Bell. Thanks to producer Paul and the good folks here at WCPT AM 820 in Chicago. As always, thanks to my radio mentors, Steve and Johnny. Again, if you want to reach us, check us out at carstuff@consumerguide.com. That is carstuff@consumerguide.com. Hey, let's talk more about cars again next week.